Welcome to our show, everybody. I'm Rick Pettigrew. Our stories from this past week of Archaeologica report on new evidence that Ireland's Kerry cow was actually a bear, stone tools in Saudi Arabia that show that Neanderthals ventured that far south, a 4,000-year-old Austronesian painting in Indonesia that reveals that those early seafarers ventured far and wide, and grave goods on the northern Peruvian coast showing that sophisticated metallurgy was well established in pre-Inca times. Thanks to everyone for supporting our subscription platform, Heritage Broadcasting Service, available at heritagetac.org. We have hundreds of titles you can binge upon, including our recent video series about searching for the lost aircraft of Amelia Earhart. Please help us spread the word. Again, that link is heritagetac.org. Our tour program, TAC Tours, will continue in January 2027 with our tour of Maya cities in the Yucatan. Registration is still open for that. The link to our tour program is at archaeologychannel.org/tours. Send us feedback on the Archaeology Channel Facebook page or post a message on our social networking site, ArchaeoSeek. And now, here's Laura Kennedy with the audio news from Archaeologica. We hope you find this to be a valuable part of your day.
Welcome to the audio news from Archaeologica. I'm Laura Kennedy, and these are the headlines in archaeological and historical news for the week of August 16th through the 22nd, 2026. We begin this week with a fascinating new study that completely challenges our understanding of how farming first arrived in the British Isles. For over three decades, body complexes of animal remains have served as the earliest known evidence of domesticated livestock in Great Britain and Ireland. Excavators originally uncovered these famous bone fragments during the 1980s and 1990s at Ferreter's Cove, which is a small bay located on the Dingle Peninsula in County Derry, Ireland. The late Professor Peter Woodman of the Department of Archaeology at University College Cork led those initial coastal excavations. Because researchers dated the organic material to the end of the Mesolithic period, specifically between 8,000 and 4,000 BC, they believed that the fragments belonged to ancient domesticated cattle. The find eventually earned the popular nickname of the Kerry Cow. For years, scientists argued that these cattle bones proved that local Mesolithic hunter-gatherers maintained regular contact with Neolithic farming communities migrating from mainland Europe. However, Dr. Martin Moucheron, a postdoctoral researcher at the University College Dublin School of Archaeology, has completely upended this long-held historical narrative. Writing in PAST, the official newsletter of the Prehistoric Society, Dr. Moucheron detailed how his team re-examined these iconic collections. Working under the direct mentorship of Professor Graham Warren at University College Dublin, Dr. Moucheron collaborated closely with Dr. Benjamin Geary, Dr. Barbara O'Donabane, and Dr. Margaret McCarthy from University College Cork, alongside Kate Cann from University College Dublin. The research team sent the contested bone fragments to the French National Center for Scientific Research Laboratory in Lille to undergo advanced biomolecular testing. Technicians applied a modern scientific technique called zooms, which identifies animal species by analyzing proteins preserved inside ancient bone collagen. The results stunned the team. The bones did not belong to domesticated cattle at all. Instead, the preserved proteins revealed that the fragments came from an ancient brown bear and a wild boar. As reported by phys.org, this discovery removes the primary piece of archaeological evidence for early agriculture in the region. Archaeologists currently possess no proof that domesticated animals or farming influenced Ireland or Great Britain before 4000 BC. This development forces a major rethink of how ancient communities transitioned into agricultural societies. While the research team continues their analysis to glean further insights into prehistoric Ireland's bear populations, this study serves as a reminder of the value in applying modern scientific methods to important archaeological collections and ideas. Next, we travel to the arid expanses of the Saudi Arabian desert, where a fascinating new analysis of ancient stone tools indicates that Neanderthals maintained a far more significant presence on the peninsula than anyone previously realized. As reported by phys.org, archaeologists already knew that both Neanderthals and early modern humans traveled through the southwestern Asian region between 100,000 and 50,000 years ago. However, researchers previously lacked definitive physical evidence to place Neanderthals directly within the interior borders of Arabia. A diverse international team, including archaeologists from Europe and the Saudi Arabian Ministry of Culture, has finally changed that, publishing their results in Quaternary Science Reviews. The team focused their research on Jebel Katefa 1, which is an archaeological site located within the Nafud Desert in north-central Saudi Arabia. There, they recovered a collection of Middle Paleolithic stone artifacts from an ancient lake bed. To determine who manufactured these tools, the researchers utilized a method called statistical shape analysis. They compared the precise shapes of the Jebel Katefa 1 artifacts against a massive database of 704 tools recovered from various sites across Africa, Arabia, and the Levant. These data reveal that the artifacts closely matched tools that Neanderthals produced, rather than tools made by early modern humans. To find out when these toolmakers lived, the team used luminescence dating on the surrounding lake bed sediment. This analysis showed that the site was active between 60,000 and 50,000 years ago. During this specific window, shifting climate patterns brought more rainfall, transforming the dry interior into a hospitable landscape filled with vegetation and wildlife. Fossils remain incredibly scarce in this desert environment, so archaeologists have not yet discovered Neanderthal skeletal remains on the peninsula. Nevertheless, this study successfully places Neanderthals further south on the globe than any previous discovery. It also shows that they thrived outside the cold forests and frozen tundra landscapes that people typically associate with them. Our next story brings us to southern Indonesia, where a small painting of a sunburst illuminates the symbolic motivations behind one of prehistory's most extraordinary seafaring expansions. As reported by The Conversation, the Austronesian migration began around 4,200 years ago as people left Taiwan to colonize numerous islands to the south. They ultimately migrated as far west as Madagascar and as far east as Easter Island. Through this movement, they spread their characteristic red pottery, rectangular stone adzes, and their language group. This language family eventually produced modern descendants like Malay, Javanese, Tagalog, and Hawaiian. Archaeologists long debated the motivation behind this massive dispersal. While previous studies examined economic development and population growth, some scholars propose a different hypothesis. They suggest that the Austronesians shared a powerful charismatic cultural identity that spurred their daring voyages and allured outsiders to join them. Researchers have explored this idea over the past few decades through rock art, which represents their clearest remaining cultural artifact. An international team led by scholars from the Australian National University and Indonesia's National Research and Innovation Agency kept this hypothesis in mind during their first visit to the Indonesian island of Witar in 2023. At this place, just north of Timor-Leste, they identified a large rock shelter named Huknar and recorded numerous paintings on its walls. The team returned to the site in 2024 for further study. Among their discoveries, they uncovered a stone plaque painted with bold red concentric circles. This sunray motif is a common feature of the Austronesian painting tradition. These artworks often feature geometric sunray designs alongside small human figures on boats or carrying weapons. Archaeologists have located similar artwork on boat prows and cliff walls across eastern Indonesia and the western Pacific. Radiocarbon dating placed the Huknar sunray plaque at 4,000 years old, making it one of the earliest markers of the Austronesian migration. The team notes that people occupied Huknar as far back as 9,500 years ago, when the site served as a hub for an obsidian trade network connecting Witar to four other regional islands. Based on the new evidence, the team believes that Austronesian explorers intentionally targeted established centers of influence rather than simply traveling to the closest islands. This choice suggests that ambition and ideology drove their historic journey. Finally, we visit the northern coast of Peru, where a closer look at a burial object expands our understanding of pre-Inca Andean trade routes. As reported by Heritage Daily, archaeologists have excavated the major Huari archaeological site of Castillo de Huarmi in recent years. During its height, around 1,300 years ago, centuries before the rise of the Inca Empire, the area served as a key necropolis within the Huari network of administrative hubs, ceremonial centers, and roads. In 2012, an international team of archaeologists discovered the first intact royal tomb at the site. During subsequent excavations, they unearthed several graves belonging to specialized craftspeople. One particular burial contained the remains of a metallurgist who died at approximately 20 years of age. The excavators found a number of bronze objects resting with him, including a metal saw, an axe, knives, and chisels. Most notably, the young man clutched a small lump of dark material in his hand. This remarkable object consists of spes, or mat, a metallurgical byproduct that forms during the smelting of metal ores. Now, a collective research team from institutions including the University of Warsaw, the University of Silesia, the Polish Academy of Sciences, the University of Florida, and Juniata College has uncovered the story behind this fragment. Since natural ore deposits each contained a distinct proportion of naturally occurring lead isotopes, the team began by analyzing this geological fingerprint. They compared the sample against data from various ores, rocks, and metal artifacts across the Andes. These data pointed directly to the Pulacayo region of Bolivia as the most likely source. This finding aligns with previous chemical analyses of other metal objects recovered from Castillo de Huarmi, which also pointed to that same area. Located hundreds of kilometers away on the other side of the Andes, Pulacayo later became one of South America's most important mining centers. To date, archaeologists have not identified any definitive evidence, such as smelting furnaces or large concentrations of slag, to prove that primary smelting took place at Castillo de Huarmi itself. Therefore, communities likely processed the raw ore near the Bolivian mines before transporting the material north. The metal probably arrived at Castillo de Huarmi as partially processed material, semi-finished products, or completed objects intended for recycling. Llama caravans, or maritime routes, easily moved these shipments across the vast Andean landscape. Given the distance, the research team believes that skilled craftspeople and their knowledge of sophisticated metallurgical techniques may also have circulated along these same routes. That wraps up the news for this week. For more stories and daily news updates, visit Archaeologica on the World Wide Web at archaeologica.org, where all the news is history. Also, be sure to check out our growing subscription platform, Heritage Broadcasting Service, at heritagetac.org. I'm Laura Kennedy, and I'll see you next week.
This has been the audio news from Archaeologica, presented by the Archaeology Channel. Be sure to check back with us next week for our next edition. You can spread the word about the audio news by clicking on the Share This link on our audio news webpage, or just by telling your friends. Thanks very much for stopping by.